Hello, I'm Russell Michaels and welcome to Cine Politics, where we discuss the social and, of course, the political issues which have inspired films and documentaries from around the world. On today's programme, we're discussing the documentary Every Step You Take, which takes its title from the well-known cautionary song by Sting. Austrian filmmaker Nino Leitner focuses his camera lens on the 4.2 million CCTV cameras which have mushroomed across the suburbs and cities of the British Isles, keeping its population under surveillance 24 hours a day. Leitner's film asks, who is watching every step we take, and what is the effect on an entire society which has its privacy scrutinised by the state? It seems that the balance between security and liberty is being tested to the limit, and the startling revelation that CCTV mostly fails to combat crime begs another question. Is Britain watching both its security and its liberty disappearing live on camera?
There are now millions of cameras, but the cost of that has been billions of pounds.
Nowhere, but nowhere in the world that has anything like this number.
It's a very positive organisation. We're not Big Brother by any stretch of the imagination.
There's a war on terrorism, which is a meaningless phrase, but it sounds good if you don't think about it.
To say that it didn't stop it is not an argument for not having it.
It was useful, but it wasn't magically useful in the sense of, oh yeah, we just pressed the button, rewind the tape, and there's the bomber.
But there's no concern to hide the camera.
Do you know what these black things up there are?
Lights.
Lights.
A scientific study of CC surveillance found there was no alteration in crime rate. It's money gone down the drain, actually.
The product of CCTV is film, and we live in a media age.
I'll be able to disclose that footage to you if you are actually caught on the footage. If it's got anybody else walking past the camera, then we can't release it to you.
So who's going to protect the vulnerable? You know, it's got to be someone who cares about them.
Es geht nicht darum, ob ich dem Staat trau oder misstrau, sondern der Staat muss so organisiert sein, als ob wir das Schlimmste von ihm annehmen können.
So, how did Britain become the surveillance capital of the world? Who is allowed to view the footage from the millions of cameras and who isn't? And should we be more concerned about surveillance by our governments or by private companies? Well, braving our cameras to discuss every step you take are my guests, Annie Machon, former MI5 intelligence officer, and veteran film critic Neil Norman. Very warm welcome to the programme. To start straight away with you, Neil, what nightmare scenario is the film persuading us of, or is the issue of surveillance a little more subtle than that?
Well, I mean, it's showing quite clearly that in the UK, there we are being watched 24 hours a day. I think the figure is that there is one CCTV camera for every 14 people.
It's astounding.
Which is an astounding figure. So that every single move of ours is monitored on the street in certain public places. Now, what that means to people on the street is very unclear, because not a lot of people seem to care very much,
even if
they're aware of it.
Apparently a Londoner on average is on camera about 300 times a day. Annie, to bring you in here, if you've nothing to fear, you've nothing to worry about. If we're innocent, why should we worry? Is the film a little hysterical, maybe?
Not at all. I think the film understates what we should be worrying about, and it's, you know, it's an old chestnut, that line, and it's very naive, because that's how people do slide into living in a police state. I think, though, we need to pull back a little bit. I mean, people do get very angry at the idea that their bins are being inspected, that they're on speed cameras, all those sort of things.
Yeah.
CCTV is part of that model. But as a country, we've never really had to think about how we relate to the government. We don't have a written Bill of Rights. We don't have a written constitution. So we don't have those protections. And I think we need some sort of mature debate about where we're going as a society. Because if you look at what's happening across the rest of Europe, where there are written constitutions, people are more active citizens, then they are concerned about these sort of moves. I've just come back from a tour in Canada, And we have a stinking reputation over there as being a police state.
Really?
You know, all these people kept coming up to me saying, is it really as bad as we've heard? Are there CCTV cameras on every corner? Are they listening to your telephone conversations? And I said, yes, but most of the Brits don't seem to worry about it.
No, there's a level of apathy amongst the Brits that is possibly as a result of what you say, the fact that we don't have these constitutional rights, or we don't have a central way of objecting to them in any way. It has to be done through individuals or little campaign groups or lobby groups.
Did the film, Neil, persuade you that liberty has changed in the UK since the proliferation of the cameras, the extreme proliferation in the 90s and beyond,
No,
we don't know about that change?
No, it didn't. And the reason it didn't do that is because it relies far too heavily on a series of talking heads and doesn't provide enough documented evidence of abuses or case studies. I mean, just to take one American student who was caught leaving his house in a hoodie and then questioned by police and for 5 minutes because they thought he was someone seen kicking a car, and he wasn't, because it was isn't good enough. I mean, that's nothing. It's a we needed far more sort of good, strong examples of abuses and possibly the benefits of these things.
Right. Now, just to bring you in there on that, Annie, you're a cynic about this, but the film does say that, you know, stolen cars, for example, the number plates will be tracked. It's hard to steal a car in Britain and drive around and not be found. Isn't that a good thing?
Well, they do say, even the experts in the film say that they don't know the legality of snooping on people like that. But police officers in charge of these sort of departments within the police services are saying things like, well, it doesn't help. I mean, it might have reduced opportunistic snatch-and-grab crime, like, nicking a car stereo or something like that. But in terms of reducing the figures of violent crime, which is what most of the public think it does, it has no impact whatsoever. In fact, the head of the Metropolitan Department charged with using CCTV said that it might have helped solve 3% of minor crime, and that was it. But, of course, it's very good for business. The film does make one very good point, which is all these CCTV cameras are being sold to the government, to councils, by arms companies. So it's the military-industrial complex in full cry again.
We'll come back to the big corporations question, but just very briefly, Neil, the money spent on this, apparently $500 million at least in the last 10 years or so, but it may well top that.
Yes.
Is the money alone a reason to object?
Well, not alone, no. It's certainly a good reason. Well, I mean, because someone points out in the film, if you could spend, a fraction of that amount on street lighting, which would actually resolve certain amounts of street crime after dark.
In fact, the statistic that I've read in a report was that 5% of crime was alleviated in some way by CCTV, although I don't know how they can prove that, and 20% difference in crime with just added street lighting, so that's a good point, and it does seem to bear out. Let's pause there and see a clip where the film examines if CCTV is really giving us real security, or is the illusion of security making us less safe.
Britain is the surveillance capital of the world. We think in some senses cameras can be quite dangerous because they're always justified in terms of giving people protection against crime. The arguments that are always used is that cameras will reduce street crime, violence on the street, and they will make women safer, they will help prevent rapes. But the truth of this is that they do no such thing. At the very best, it could be that if there is a mugging, an attack on the street, there could be CCTV evidence that could be used to get a conviction. Although that is very, very, very rare.
The point that the CCTV is very good for post-event investigations is true. But if I take you back to the Irish terrorism in the 70s and 80s, it's quite clear that the proliferation of CCTV frightened them away. They did not like seeing themselves on camera when they were on trial at the Old Bailey, realising this is not the place to work.
So the IRA were gone, but the cameras were still there. In his historical book, Violent London, Professor Clive Bloom identifies a significant consequence.
If you're going to justify the expense of such surveillance, you have to have a right to justify it. With the end of the IRA's activities, new enemies have to be found, and of course they're found in the Countryside Alliance, they're found in hippie movements, in countercultural movements, etc., etc.
So Professor Clive Bloom there, it seems to be saying that the state needs to invent enemies even if they don't exist. Annie, is it as much about monitoring civil rights groups, anti-war groups, as much as it is about solving crimes?
Very much so. I mean, they mentioned the justification for CCTV as stopping the IRA, but in fact it came in too late to have any impact on that. But yes, they will always have an enemy. They will always invent an enemy to justify taking away our civil liberties in this country. And we are seeing particularly the groups that protest against the war, against the environmental issues, that sort of thing, are being targeted. And this is a sort of big brother gone mad. You know, there's no justification for it, apart from the fact that it's jobs for the boys within MI5, MI6 and the police.
And you're ex-MI5, so you have some stories you can tell about that.
Very much so, because I worked in a section called F2 in the early 1990s, which was looking at left-wing activists. And in fact, at that point, shut down that section with the aid of my co-workers. And I think probably what's happened since the Iraq War and the increased embarrassment that is given to the government because of anti-war demonstrations and things, that they've probably reactivated it. That and the extreme right. Now, investigating British citizens for their political and democratic activity is not on in Britain. It's more like something you'd have in the Stasi state.
Well, there is a case that particularly interested me. The Gloucestershire police stopped, in 2003 this is, a busload, coachload of anti-war activists on their way to a peaceful demonstration at an airbase. They hadn't committed any crime, they were just on their way. They were pulled over, stopped. Is this proof of the filmmakers' kind of darkest worry, Neil?
In a funny sort of way, I think it is, actually, because it's not what's happening now, it's what's likely to happen in the future. Mm. And that is, what's likely to happen in the future is that groups that are considered subversive, Countryside Alliance or something like that, yeah, they're going to monitor them, be surveyed, and they're going to try and prevent anything happening, any demonstrations, before it's happened. Well, that is really dangerous territory, because then we are in Orwell territory, we're in Philip K. Dick territory, we're in Minority Report.
Right. Yes.
We're entering the arena of thought crime, indeed.
We are.
Yeah. There was another case recently, I think, where there was a planning meeting of environmentalists near some electricity station or nuclear power station, and the police swooped and arrested over 100 of them. Just because they might have done something the next day which might have caused a disturbance of the peace.
And this is where surveillance and monitoring actions could well encourage that.
And provoke it, indeed. Yeah.
And briefly, is privacy a right, Annie, that we, either of you, that we think we have, but we don't really?
We have no rights in this country. We have, because we don't have a written Bill of Rights. The only thing we can rely on is the European laws that come in that give us some sort of notional protection under the UK law. But of course then we have to rely on the judges to uphold that. But we should think in terms of rights. Those basic rights from the Universal Declaration to the European Convention were there for a reason, and that was to stop atrocities such as happened in the Second World War from being foisted on us and visited on us. And I think people need to remember that, why they are so important. It's not some nebulous philosophical concept. This is core to any civilization.
Do you think, very briefly, Neil, that we have just in this country, in Britain, and obviously in other countries in the world, operate slightly differently, but particularly Britain, we've just slightly not thought about what's making our society work when it does work?
I don't think there's any slightly about it. I don't think we think about it at all, actually. Yeah. I mean, I'm reminded of the fact that Mick Jagger wrote maybe 10 years ago in this song, nowadays it's all secrecy, no privacy. Mm. And, I mean, he's hardly a prophet, but I mean, you know, it's true. It's come to pass.
You can see it coming around the corner, and technology has facilitated that, of course. Well, let's take another pause there and see a clip where the vulnerability of digital CCTV systems could allow attacks on CCTV itself.
There's always the possibility of misuse. I say every time a human being is involved in a process, there's a possibility of someone misbehaving. The important thing is to make sure that people are properly trained, there are codes of practice, and they're enforced and inspected. And if anyone does transgress and misuse CCTV, we've got to make sure we can track that back as best we can.
Analog CCTV is increasingly being replaced by modern digital systems, which can be accessed over a network and even the internet. The problem with this, if online, these systems can be hacked like any other computer, but hacking them is often not even necessary. Thousands of unprotected CCTV cameras are accessible for anyone, anytime. Their administrators failed to restrict access to the software controlling the devices. Anyone knowing a part of the distinct software code can enter it into Google and consequently gain access to thousands of CCTV feeds from all over the world. You can watch live broadcasts from cafes in the US, churches in Poland, and of course, loads of footage from all over the UK.
Annie, could we therefore be less safe because we've invested so much in so many CCTV systems?
Absolutely. I mean, this is something we see time and time again. It's almost like a sort of virus we picked up from the Americans, where there is an over-reliance by the security agencies on technical wizardry rather than good, right, focused investigative skills and intelligence gathering and things like that. And of course, gadgets can be hacked, gadgets can break, all the rest of it, and are liable as well. If people want to frame you, they can do it. It's interesting, though, that they see hacking as bad, because quite often digital privacy campaigns in Europe particularly are focusing on hacking to highlight flaws and insecurities within these sort of organisations. And I think increasingly we are relying on hackers to show that moving and relying on technology now is just a bad thing. You know, it does make us vulnerable to identity theft and all sorts of stuff. So it's an interesting angle.
I don't know about you, Neil, but I actually tried to find a few CCTV cameras that were linked to the internet last night, and I did. I was looking into a private office, I was looking into a database room, and I was looking at a square in Europe somewhere with a camera on a pole.
Yes.
I didn't know how to access them otherwise, but they were online. But as a question about our governments, can we really trust them with our data at all? There have been so many lost, in Britain, this is a recent scandal, so many lost CDs, databases.
I know. I mean, they do seem to be incredibly careless with rather essential information. I mean, perhaps not top secret, but certainly personal information. And I think that the real problem is, as I said before, it lies in the future. It's not so much as what's happening now, because nobody's going to care about it until something happens. And something clearly will happen. And it's going to happen because of the archive of material that's being built up now, or has been built up, because that database of personal documentation, personal movements, something like that, at some stage down the line, it may be 2 years, it may be 5 years, it may be 10 years, is going to come back and bite them in the ass, and it's going to be really, really serious.
It might be multiple bites as well. They have so many different databases, and the impulse of this government seems to be to sort of try and bring them all together into one ginormous database. You know, we have databases for travel, for identification, for health records.
And the idea that there will be a time limit on this information is absolute nonsense. Of course, they will keep it forever.
And briefly, Annie, what about selling this data on? Is it a commodity? Should we be more worried about private companies monitoring us?
Well, very much. There's been an explosion in private security firms in the last decade, and they are snooping particularly on activists as well. But of course, they do sell it on to marketing companies, so it can end up anywhere.
So the idea that something could pop up in 5 years' time, we don't know whether it exists in the first place. Should we know what's on file, Neil?
I think we should, actually. How we go about that, I have not the faintest idea, but I think that we should start really lobbying, actually, to create a consciousness, which we don't seem to have in this country, which they clearly have in Austria or Germany or something like that, that this is going on, and these are likely to be the consequences.
And it's gone too far. There have been some professional voices who've raised the alarm, and so we'll see what happens next.
Including the former heads of all the intelligence agencies in this country.
Ah, well, let's come back to that. That's an interesting point. After a last clip, where our brave new CCTV world beckons us all into a maximum surveillance future.
Practically every high street institution will have cameras watching you as you come down the street. They're simply not aware of that. But where it begins to impact on people, as in the growing number of companies, of firms, that are actually introducing cameras in the workplace, then people's attitudes begin to change, because for the first time, they actually understand what it means to have their privacy compromised.
The vision that people have here is to link this not just to license plate, but also to facial recognition systems. So, for instance, that you would no longer be anonymous in public space. Every time you enter public space, your presence could be registered on the system. Now, we're not there yet. The technology isn't able to do that with any consistency. But it is the vision than a number of people have about the nature of how these systems can be used. And we now already see it with car license plates, so the model is there.
I think certainly on the CCTV front we'll see some increasingly sophisticated methods of facial recognition, so that people who are wanted, people who are suspected, could be picked out in a crowd. That would be quite an advantage.
The fantasy of CCTV policymakers seems almost unlimited. There are already shouting video surveillance systems in operation that enable the operators to give verbal warnings directly to people who behave antisocially. The latest systems are even able to listen for people speaking in aggressive tones or gunshots. It's been reported that the Home Office is even considering to put new kinds of hidden cameras on Britain's streets, which could look right through people's clothing. It is claimed to be helpful in discovering explosives.
So, Annie, is this, as the they use the word fantasy, is this an Orwellian fantasy, or is it really already happening, the kind of futuristic stuff they're talking about?
A lot of it's already happening, of course. I mean, one has to worry when the former heads of MI5 and MI6 come out and say, well, we're living in a surveillance society and the government's taking too many of our basic rights away. If they're saying it, you know, we should all be discussing this. It's terrifying. But it's not just CCTV, of course. It's also the fact that things like our local councils can eavesdrop on our telephones now under what was supposed to be terrorism legislation. It's a sort of encroaching surveillance culture within the public system, not just the police and the spies, that is worrying.
There have been two cases of violence against citizens, particularly big ones, and the Jean-Charles de Menezes. Mm-hmm. No camera was filming him being shot in a tube train in London. Mm. And Ian Tomlinson, who was beaten by a policeman and sadly died. Neil, do we need CCTV but to protect citizens from the state sometimes?
That's a very interesting question. Yeah, maybe we do. Although I would say that the proliferation of people with mobile phones that can take pictures is probably sufficient to capture any bad moves by authoritarian regime, you know.
I'm not entirely sure. Is this now reversing? That we're in a situation where we're filming the filmers?
We are in a completely ridiculous situation where because we're so used to the digital technology and so used to filming each other, become a nation of voyeurs, but also become a nation of exhibitionists. I mean, you know, if you've got drunks on the street, they know they're being filmed. Mm. They will perform for those CCTV cameras. They will do stuff. I mean, what's the point of monitoring that? I mean, it's an extremely odd situation.
I always used to think that the TV series Big Brother was a sort of grooming process for our culture. You know, look, just allow yourself to be surveyed 24 hours a day and you too could achieve Z-list celebrity, fame, and fortune. Yes. You know, it's a sort of insidious process.
Is it too late, Annie? Can we reverse this now in the UK and other countries that want to change their culture of surveillance?
Yeah, well, I think the UK is far further down that line than most other countries, most other Western democracies, more ex-democracies. I would say the window of opportunity of doing that is closing rapidly. It's very much a case of a race between getting people to think about this and debate before the governments lock us down. So I would urge people to go out and, you know, investigate this and look into it and get active and campaigning about it as fast as possible.
Maybe we need new laws to keep up with the technology as it races ever forward. That's all we have time for. We've run out of time. Thank you very much. And we'll end with the words of Benjamin Franklin. Any society that would give up a little liberty to gain a little security will deserve neither and lose both. Mm-hmm. So, on that note, it's a warm thank you to my guests, Annie Mashon and Neil Norman, and also thank you, and I hope you'll join us again at the same time next week. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear your views too, so please do email us at the address on the screen, cinepolitics@presstv.co.uk, and join the debate here with your questions or any suggestions for future films to discuss. But for now, goodbye.